Ryan Reynolds here from Mint Mobile. With the price of just about everything going up during inflation, we thought we'd bring our prices down. So to help us, we brought in a reverse auctioneer, which is apparently a thing.
Mint Mobile Unlimited Premium Wireless. I bet you get 30, 30, I bet you get 30, I bet you get 20, 20, 20, I bet you get 20, 20, I bet you get 15, 15, 15, 15, just $15 a month, sold.
Give it a try at mintmobile.com/switch.
$45 up front for 3 months plus taxes and fees. Promo rate for new customers for limited time. Unlimited more than 40 gigabytes per month. Slows full terms at mintmobile.com.
Hey there, it's Michelle Norris. I'm host of a podcast called Your Mama's Kitchen. When I travel, I'm usually looking for a way to find a taste of home when I'm not at home. And one of the things I love to do when I am at home is entertain. And Airbnb allows me to do that. When I was in California recently, I rented a house that had a great kitchen. And when we were sitting around the table, we're all thinking, we're in someone else's house. Someone could be in all of our homes as well. If you have a home, but you're not always at home, you have an Airbnb. Your home might be worth more than you think. Find out how much at airbnb.com/host.
Welcome to another episode of Why Would You Tell Me That with me, Neil Delamere, and him, Dave Moore. We talk about the, what was the phrase you coined? The stories that you don't know, but you should know. The amazing things that you don't know. But before we get to that, and I'm sure it's going to be amazing, I have a bone to pick with you. You started in what, I mean, we have been divided in many ways in this country. Some would say through religion, some would say through class. I think the great whole nut debate of last week.
You couldn't let this lie.
It's possibly the schism that needs to be addressed. Well, I say I couldn't let this lie because, frankly, I began to doubt myself. Such was the relentless attack, not only from you, but a pincer movement with the great Dr. Kit Chapman. I expected you to turn, you Lundy, you Judas, you Pontius Pilate, you Benjamin Franklin, right? You Declan Rice, bit harsh. Right? Yeah, but Chapman, dragging Chapman in, making him a collaborator.
I didn't even say unto him, you brought it up straight away. He straight away refuted any claim you had to it being a normal decision for a man any younger than 40 to eat a whole nut. But he was like, no.
Yes. I brought him in, much like Theresa May, when she called that election to bump up her majority and then lost. Yeah. She made a miscalculation, and me bringing him in was a massive miscalculation as well.
If somebody hasn't heard the last episode, they've dipped into this one because our episodes are evergreen. You can listen to them in any order you want. Mm. But let's give them a little bit of context, which is you did in the last episode say that you eat whole nut, Cadbury's whole nut bars.
Yeah, so we were talking about who would we want to sponsor us. You said Coke Zero because you are a 17-year-old girl, and I said Coke. I did not say Coke Zero. I said a whole nut Cadbury's chocolate bar.
Yeah, and I immediately posited that only middle-aged men like you could make that decision.
No, you said elderly people. You
no,
said
I started
old
with middle-aged
people,
for certainly.
And then went
certain.
To old, and you said nobody under 40, I think.
No one under 40 eats whole nuts. Absolutely, it doesn't happen.
28 years old, eating them as my go-to since I was about 8. Thank you, Donal Lonergan. Thank you, Donal Lonergan, who got in touch at Why Would You Tell Me That. S.M. Horgan, proudly eat whole nut as a woman no less, Dave, in my 30s. And we've had another couple like that. You've had private messages as well.
Yeah, do you want me to share them with you? I was hoping that you were just going to ignore these. No, but
no,
okay. I made the mistake of sending them to you. Right, so I got a DM on Instagram from somebody called Dan St. Ledger.
Yes.
Who says, of course you'd take a Coke Zero sponsorship over Maserati. You don't want to lose your BMW sponsorship. No, I don't. Hashtag brand ambassador. And then also justice for the whole nut. Yeah. And then Shane said, Cadbury's whole nut has in fact been my favorite thing since I was a child, followed closely by a fruit and nut bar. And I'm not actually a geography teacher, which was my assertion that the only people who eat whole nut bars are the people who put leather patches on their corduroy jackets, who of course are geography teachers.
Yes, and hashtag justice for Neil was another thing that was sent into the app. Why would you tell me that? So I think, I mean, there's only a handful of people who've been in touch, but I mean, I think that's a resounding victory.
Yeah, I think that what's this called is, this is called a loud minority, is what that's called.
This is called a skewed poll. That's what this is called.
Yes,
it's like
is.
When 150% of people vote for Vladimir Putin. I'm not sure if it's something we can necessarily take as read, but I'm just saying there are other people of my taste.
Yes, there are other strange human beings in the world. I will give you that.
Thank you. Just wanted to make that point. Anyway, this week it is Dave's turn to tell me something that will blow my mind. Oh, what is it, Dave?
It's broad. It's big. It's arguably the biggest thing we can talk about.
Okay.
But in part two, I'm
going to... Ian Dowie's arse.
Wow. Ian Dowie. What a ridiculous thing to reference.
Maybe I should have said Mark Hughes, but it's a similar big glutes shielding the ball.
Imagine something even bigger than that.
Okay.
And that something is our universe, space. I want to tell you in part two, with the help of an amazing actor, writer, host, and space nerd, Kalpana Pott. She's going to tell us about her book, Spaced Out, A Casual Approach to the Cosmos, which is absolutely brilliant. But Kalpana will definitely come on and wow us with the claim, and it's a big one, Neil, that space is terrifying.
Wow. Okay.
There are a lot of things in space that want to kill us. And some of them are the laws of physics. And we're going to investigate that with Kalpana in part two. Yeah, it'll be fun. It'll be fun. I promise you that. But first of all, I must educate you in other terrifying things.
Yeah.
Things from this world, the one we live on. For example, did you know that in Disneyland, there is a Pirates of the Caribbean ride?
Okay.
Okay.
I knew that, yeah.
Yep. The engineers from Disney decided that the fake skeletons that were brought in by the art designers for the purpose of terrifying the guests as they swung around and the upside down and whatever, that they just weren't really creepy enough, you know. So what they did was they got real skeletons.
Oh, excellent.
They went to the University of California, Los Angeles Anatomy Department, and they said to the guys, do you guys have any real skeletons that we could put in Disneyland? And they went, sure. I mean, so much about that interaction is wrong. But
Well, I mean, I thought when you said they got real skeletons, I was hoping that it was going to go to grave robbing. I was hoping it was going to go full grave robbing. Lads from Disney went down and started digging people up, full Burke and hair. But they went to and the boys had no issue. We're not using Boney there.
Off you go. And also Disney, for some reason, had no issue with the art department going, yeah, we, I went on the Pirates of the Caribbean ride of the weekend, and I have to say, you guys did an awesome job, man. It's so terrifying. Those skeletons look so real. Yeah, that's because they are real.
Yeah. They're so real that you can still see, like, hip replacements. You can still see, like, ceramic hips. You can see stents.
Gold teeth.
Just falling into the rib cage. Wow, that's terrifying.
Now, Disney claims that they very quickly altered this scenario and moved the real skeletons out. But there are claims that at least two of the existing skeletons on the Pirates of the Caribbean ride in Disneyland are real.
Are we going to get sued?
Possibly. But I'm prepared. I'm prepared for that.
Yeah, you're prepared for that by not having any money.
No, exactly.
I have prepared my whole life. Come at me, Disney. We have nothing.
Yeah.
We have nothing.
But in the world of skeletons, like, being buried alive, I think is a fear that most people would just intrinsically be fearful of, right?
Absolutely,
You think about, like, any of the movies that have been made where someone is buried alive and the scratching and... like the lighting of a match and going out and seeing, you know.
That Ryan Reynolds one where he's.
Yeah. What was that one again?
It's called Buried, is it?
I think it is called Buried. Yeah. Unfortunately, for a period in the 17th century in England, it was a thing. Because medicine wasn't quite where it is now. And doctors misdiagnosed a large number of ill and approaching death, possibly, patients. And said, yeah, Mary there in the bed now, she's gone. It's very sad. So lash her in a box there and stick her underground. And I'm not altogether sure when the process of exhumation began that showed us that Mary, for example, was scratching at her coffin. But it became a thing that doctors would send people to the grave only to find out that, well, hang on, they weren't dead at all. So Alice Blunden is a lady who was an example. A doctor mistook her for dead after she drank sedatives. You know, I mean, it's the 17th century in England. You know, you're looking for something to do.
looking for something to do. It's either that or get dunked into a pool for being a witch.
Exactly.
So, you know, yeah.
You go for the sedative drink. So she was brought to the doctor. The doctor said, no, I'm afraid Alice Blunden has moved on. She has, you know, gone to the other side. So they put her in a coffin and they sent her down to the ground. There was some noise as they were lowering her down.
Yeah.
So they brought her back up.
Yeah.
And they exhumed her. And she was near death because, indeed, she was, you know, under the influence of all of these sedatives. They brought her out. They tried to bring her to and help her, whatever. She never recovered.
Right.
And they reburied her when she passed away. Only in the days afterwards to go and say, you know, we should probably study Alice because she got so close to death. Maybe there are markers in her physiology. So they dug her back up. And she was in a new coffin. And guess what? That also had scratch marks. Because she wasn't dead the second time.
Oh, God. Burn me. Just burn me. Just even if I get a sniffle, just burn me. Just
yeah.
If I look a little bit shook and I'm 50, just do it. Take no chances. Burn me.
Well, so she was buried alive twice in quick succession. I mean...
And tell me this. Did Zurich or Aviva, did they pay out? Was this some sort of an insurance scam?
I always thought
of Lazarus, like having to go, sorry, lads, having to give a check back.
Yeah, exactly.
I'm so sorry about this.
Your widow will have to return that money.
Yeah. The widow of Lazarus is living in the Las Vegas of Judea or wherever she is at the time.
Yeah.
She's drinking a pina colada, looking out at the River Jordan. And just going, and then he
goes
back.
What are you doing back?
Sake. I've just bought a condominium, for Christ's sake. She's there with some sort of Latin lover. And he's there, white trousers, pina colada, silk ruffle shirt.
Shirt billowing in the wind.
Yeah, hola.
Yeah. So in order to combat this, it was a real fear around this time. They developed a pretty ingenious way of allowing you to signal if you were to wake in the coffin.
So, yeah, we talked about some of these. Now, do you remember we talked about the patents for certain ones when we did the funeral games? So you could kind of ring a bell and that sort of stuff.
So the bell was really popular. So the bell would be a pole that would go in all the way through the earth, you know, because you're buried 6 feet down or whatever. And in there, there'd be a little string and you'd pull the string and it would jingle a bell up the top or flutter a flag. There was lots of different ways of doing it. And there was a guy called Dr. Adolf Gutsmuth in Germany who patented safety coffins. So
right.
He told everyone, I've got you covered. I've got the safety coffins. All you have to do is buy one of these when you die and you'll be sorted. So he patented these ones. He was buried alive twice in a safety coffin.
Oh, okay.
On purpose.
Okay, right.
To demonstrate,
I just thought this was going to be the most ironic thing ever.
No,
okay.
No.
He was killed in an avalanche. Oh, God.
So in 1822, he stayed underground for several hours and ate a meal of... Now, listen to this, because the ingredients are incredible, because I want this right now. Soup, bratwurst, marzipan, sauerkraut, spätzle, whatever that is, some beer... And for dessert, he had something that I can barely read called Prinzregententorte. I don't really know what that is, but that's what he had. And it was fed to him down a coffin feeding tube.
Oh, okay. I mean, there's a lot to unpack there. First of
all... He didn't bring it with him, Neil. It wasn't like the Egyptians where they went, listen, you know what you might need when you go over there? All the gold, you know, you might need some food. You might need some pickled eggs. No. He had it sent down the feeding tube.
So did he only eat stuff that was cylindrical? It was brat first and then it was just... And did he kind of... Was he lying at the bottom with his mouth open?
No, open
like,
under
a, like
tube,
a thrush or a blackbird. Feed me like one of your blackbirds.
I'm not altogether sure. Video footage of the 1822 prank by Dr. Adolf was few and far between.
Yeah, but also, I mean, he was down there several hours.
Yeah.
Bratwurst, did you say beer? You certainly said
beer,
sauerkraut.
Soup,
and
marzipan,
soup.
Yeah.
I would have thought that the gases involved in being in a confined space with bratwurst and beer.
And sauerkraut.
You would have thought that, he can survive, but he... like, is it worth himself this? To yeah. death.
Yes.
Like, there's a build-up, and you remember the thing you said, the fastest man-made thing ever in the history of the universe was the
manhole off
the manhole.
Yeah,
on top of a nuke that went off.
Yeah, so it was a nuke underground, and it was a huge concrete pipe that had a manhole on top of it, and that is the fastest thing that's ever existed.
And the second fastest is whatever was on top of the pipe that fed the pipe belonging to Dr. Adolf. I would have thought.
Yeah, well, look, thankfully, it's pretty much impossible, unless someone has nefarious plans, it's pretty much impossible to be buried alive today, because modern day embalming really kind of spells out that you are, in fact, dead. So, so you don't really have anything to worry about there. What you do have to worry about is train stations. You ever been in one, Neil?
I've heard of them. Yeah.
Obviously, for some people, public transport is an option. I wouldn't understand what people are talking about. But
no,
these underground stations, apparently, these large underground caverns where mechanized transport travel called trains arrive.
Yes.
15% of the air in an underground train station is dead skin cells.
No, it's not.
Yes, it is.
It's not.
15%.
15% of the air.
Of the air.
Is dead skin cells.
Yeah, because it does not have the natural out that an outdoor, above ground building or open space or house or anything has. It doesn't have doors that open up. It doesn't have windows. Yes, it has tunnels going through it. It doesn't have natural ventilation. 15% of that air. Next time you're in London Underground or New York Subway or Paris Metro, or indeed they're building a metro in Dublin in Ireland.
Yeah.
Just remember that when it's all shiny and new and exciting and look, I'm going to the airport on a train, 15% of the air you're breathing is dead skin cells.
So if I suck in that, if I have some sort of attack, right, and just continually inhale, is there a point where I could inhale enough and then when I cough, like, it's a glove, it's a leather glove? All the skin cells have amalgamated.
You're putting a lot of design capability on the interior of your lungs.
So,
I mean, if in there was a small factory,
Trachea Designs,
that was waiting on the arrival of the raw materials, could indeed produce leather gloves.
Bronchus produce. Alveoli. That's the next one.
Alveoli. Yeah, I think it is.
I think alveoli.
I was going to say alioli, but I think that's a pasta.
I dispute that number. I dispute the 15%.
Oh, you can dispute all you want as you cough your way through the London Underground. Dispute everything you like.
What is it in your... I'm a BMW sponsored car. What is it? It's probably less than 1% dead skin cells in that, isn't it? Unless you're licking the leather seats.
Even then, the filter system on my tongue, provided by BMW, takes care of all of these things.
It's absolutely amazing. He actually has a German man who sits on his knees, right? Facing him like a weird sex scene. And your man holds up what used to be an old fencing helmet that looks like a sieve. And he is his personal sieve of the air. He calls himself Jürgen Collander. It's amazing. Just let me know, Dave, if you're going to look right. So I want to be ahead of the game. If you're looking right, I'll move with you. Looking left, I'll move with you. Just give me a bit of warning, that's all.
I've actually adapted his skills, by the way. He also does that, but he also now feeds me fries, chocolate delight, or whatever it's called, chocolate creams. He breaks them off into the little mini segments. And as I'm driving, he very quickly removes the mask, pops one in with his little delicate gloved fingers, and then puts it back again. As I
don't you chew? What are you doing chewing? Let me move your lower mandible for you. And he holds the top of his head and moves his lower mandible around. Why would you chew when I will chew for you? I don't know why I talk like this.
No,
I'm slightly disturbed. Anyway.
It doesn't sound like I'm that I'm used to it.
No, it doesn't.
No. Okay, but we know disgusting things like the air, okay, like in the train station.
Okay.
You know that your mobile phone, your own personal mobile phone,
has
18 times more bacteria than a public toilet. You know that, Neil, don't you? 18 times.
I have heard
Yeah,
that.
You have heard those ones. So those ones are like... they're reality, but I suppose like the air in the train station and like the mobile phones,
it's a testament to our body's ability to fight these things. Our lungs can filter out the 15% dead skin cells. And every time you go to a train station, you don't cough up a leather glove.
Yeah.
When you use your mobile phone, as gross as it may be that it has loads of bacteria on it, you don't get sick every few days.
Mine also has a glory hole.
Oh, your train station or your mobile phone?
No, my mobile phone, yeah. Just
has
just...
a glory hole.
I mean, you might call it a headphone, Jack, but I call it a glory hole for a mouse.
I'm glad you qualify with a mouse and not for you.
Oh no, it's way too big for me. I'm hit off the sides of that thing.
You use the little holes for the speakers at the bottom.
Oh yeah. No, the one for getting, you know, the one for getting the actual SIM card out.
The other things that are disgusting that you probably know as well, but they're terrifying, are the things that you use very regularly. If you use any kind of shared keyboard, if you hot desk, if you and your family share a laptop or a computer, a desktop computer, if you have one in work and you sit there on Mondays and Wednesdays and Sheila sits there on Tuesdays and Fridays, whatever, that is dirtier than any public toilet, even the one in train spotting. Like, they're so gross. And the dirtiest thing of all you can touch.
Yeah.
Is the horizontal handle of a shopping trolley.
Oh, well, I mean, that's the only handle on a shopping trolley, isn't it?
True.
There's no vertical.
Yes.
No, but if it was a weird world that you've been involved
no, but
in.
No, but I'm saying, you could, now you would probably get kicked out of the supermarket, but you could potentially grip the back of the vertical part of the trolley and push it that way, and it would be a lot cleaner. But that bit that you touch as you walk around has been touched, obviously, on that day by thousands of people and we're all filthy. We're absolutely all filthy. But another thing I did find terrifying is, look, I lived in Russia for a year. Russia often...
Is that the end of this sentence now? That's it?
No. That's not terrifying. But Russia gives us fairly scary things. You know, like it could be dash cam footage. You know, I don't know if you've seen Russian dash cam footage. I do enjoy them. But also things like, you know, unexplained things, horror stories. You know, it's a vast country. Obviously, a lot of it is Siberian wilderness. But this one is pretty weird. I'm going to play you a sound now. I want you to listen to this. And this is a haunted radio station. So that sounds nice, Neil, doesn't it?
Yeah, that's kind of terrifying.
That's what you'd like to, you know, as you're tuning your car radio on down a country road in Russia in the middle of Siberia. That's what you'd like to hear as you pull out into the Yekaterinburg wastelands. You'd like that to come on your car stereo.
So what's the story behind this?
So it's called UVB76.
Yeah.
Nobody has ever claimed this radio station. The government does not know what it is. The military says it has nothing to do with it. No commercial radio station has anything to do with it. It just makes this noise along with that static all the time. It occasionally, and I don't have audio of this because people find it very hard to record the audio, obviously, because it occasionally does say words.
And yet, I bet it's still like I tweeted that it's up 15% in the JNLR figures. It's like, oh, up 95% in between the bear percentiles, between 20 people between 24 and 45 and bears who are currently coming out of torpor.
And if it's a haunted radio station, the undead are a huge demographic.
Huge. Yeah. I mean, not a lot of advertisers know about how much stuff you can sell to the undead, like walking aids, waggedy clothes.
Chains.
Chainsaws.
Safety coffins.
It's a bit late at that stage.
Yeah,
isn't it
is probably a bit late at that stage, yeah. But it does. It just makes it. It's really, really weird. I've yet to find an explanation. If anyone has, I'd love you to get in touch and let me know. But UVB,
I think I did
76.
An interview with them to plug my gig. I'm pretty sure I've talked to an undead.
You and every other comedian in the country.
We're plugging a gig. Yeah, I'm thinking of the worst introduction I've ever had, but I actually can't say it's that bad.
Oh, really?
Yeah.
Oh, that's a shame. I think we all want to know.
I'll paraphrase it. I was on a rural radio station in Ireland once, and somebody, their family had been gunned down.
Jesus.
Yeah, gunned down. I was sitting beside them and there was no break and there was no song. And the DJ went, thank you very much, John or Mary, whoever it was. Thank you very much. It's a harrowing tale. Neil, I believe you're coming too.
Oh, my God.
Yeah.
That's not good. Yeah. That is not good. Okay, finally, in part one, I want to tell you about this, Neil. In St. Louis in the States, a woman signed a lease contract for an apartment.
Mm.
She moved in. She liked the place. She was a lady who liked to watch those crime shows, those documentaries. And she watched one about a cold case.
Yeah.
About a serial killer that was on a local TV channel. And while watching the documentary, she realized that the house she had rented was actually the one used by the serial killer. His name was Maury Travis, as his torture chamber for the women that he killed.
Oh, dear
The
God.
Dining table she was eating at the time was used in the crime scenes that he had committed. He'd recorded some of the crimes on video, and the real footage showed the dining table she was eating at the time. So naturally, as freaked out as she was, she got in touch with the landlady and said, listen, I'm going to have to break this lease. This is absolutely insane. You did not tell me that this was the house of a former serial killer. Like, I'm out of here. And the landlady said, nope, you signed the lease agreement, you're in. And she's like, no. Like, I did not agree to this. This is the house of a serial killer. No, you're staying in unless you take me to court or whatever. So she brought her to the St. Louis Housing Authority, who intervened. They got in touch with both of them, got them into a room, sat down, and they got the landlady to discontinue the lease, and the lady was able to leave and find another house.
The landlady kept the table.
No. The landlady was the serial killer's mother, Neil.
Oh, of course. Yeah, sorry. I can't believe I jumped to conclusions.
Yeah.
Jesus Christ.
She had literally, her son had gone to jail as a serial killer in St. Louis, and she was renting the house and not telling anybody of it sort of past, and only that the poor lady saw it.
Jesus Christ. Now, I know there's people in Dublin listening to that going, yeah, but what was the rent?
Yeah, if it was under $2,000, I'd take it.
I would 100%. Was there any outdoor space there?
How many rooms? How many bedrooms were there?
Yeah. I have a dog. Is that okay? Jesus, that is terrifying. Okay.
Well, they are terrifying. Yes, they're a collection of terrifying things, but they're not as terrifying as space, Neil. And we're going to investigate how terrifying space is in part two with Kalpana Pot. We're literally going to be scared for the next half an hour. Sit tight, everybody.
Ryan Reynolds here from Mint Mobile. With the price of just about everything going up during inflation, we thought we'd bring our prices down. So to help us, we brought in a reverse auctioneer, which is apparently a thing.
Mint Mobile Unlimited Premium Wireless. How to get 30, 30, how to get 30, how to get 20, 20, 20, how to get 20, 20, how to get 15, 15, 15, 15, just $15 a month? Sold!
Give it a try at mintmobile.com/switch.
$45 up front for 3 months plus taxes and fees. Promo rate for new customers for limited time. Unlimited more than 40 gigabytes per month. Slows full terms at mintmobile.com.
Hey there, it's Michelle Norris. I'm host of a podcast called Your Mama's Kitchen. When I travel, I'm usually looking for a way to find a taste of home when I'm not at home. And one of the things I love to do when I am at home is entertain. And Airbnb allows me to do that. When I was in California recently, I rented a house that had a great kitchen. And when we were sitting around the table, we're all thinking, we're in someone else's house. Someone could be in all of our homes as well. If you have a home, but you're not always at home, you have an Airbnb. Your home might be worth more than you think. Find out how much at airbnb.com/host.
Millions of people have lost weight with personalized plans from Noom, like Evan, who can't stand salads and still lost 50 pounds.
Salads generally for most people are the easy button, right? For me, that wasn't an option. I never really was a salad guy. That's just not who I am. But Noom worked for me.
Get your personalized plan today at Noom.com. Real Noom user compensated to provide their story. In 4 weeks, the typical Noom user can expect to lose 1 to 2 pounds per week. Individual results may vary.
Quality sleep is essential. That's why the Sleep Number Smart Bed is designed for your ever-evolving sleep needs. Need a bed that's firmer or softer on either side? Helps you sleep at a comfortable temperature? Sleep Number Smart Beds let you individualize your comfort, so you sleep better together. J.D. Power ranks Sleep Number number one in customer satisfaction with mattresses purchased in-store.
And now, save 40% on the Sleep Number Limited Edition smart bed for a limited time. For J.D. Power 2023 award information, visit jdpower.com/awards. Only at Sleep Number stores or sleepnumber.com.
Welcome back to part two of Why Would You Tell Me That? Now, Neil, we're going to be joined now by the brilliant Cal Panipat, an actor, a writer, a host, a space nerd, and the author of the brilliant book, Spaced Out, A Casual Approach to the Cosmos. Cal Pana, welcome to Why Would You Tell Me That?
Hi, guys. Thank you for having me. I will also say I am from Dublin, Ohio, so that makes
no
me...
No way.
I live in Los Angeles now, but I'm from Dublin, Ohio, so...
That is incredible. Yeah. Because like there are a couple of Dublins in the US, and it's one right. of like the things that we all dubs, we all talk about the fact there's Dublin, Ohio. We know that one. There's Dublin, California, which is on the way between... If you drive from LA to San Francisco, you pass Dublin. In fact, when I myself and my then girlfriend, now wife, we took that drive and we drove up and she was sleeping in the car because we left at like 5 a.m. whatever, but it was like, you know, 9 or 10, and I was tapping her like, wake up. I was like, what is it? And it was just another stretch of the freeway with land. I was like, this is Dublin, California. She's like, you woke me for this. And then about 10 minutes later I woke her again because her name is Tracy. We passed to Tracy, California. I was like, you're away. She's like, stop telling me things.
Just let me sleep.
Yeah. Yeah.
We're just relieved that your sentences that start with then girlfriend, that ends now wife. Rather than then girlfriend, now victim. It could go either way with you, Dave.
Come on. I'm not that kind of guy. Well,
no.
Not a serial killer?
No.
We have a very low bar here on the show. He's not a serial killer, but everything else is up for grabs.
That's right. Exactly. Amazing.
Well, to a fellow Dubliner, we welcome you to the show. Neil is from a different part of Ireland called Offaly, but we won't hold that against him, even though I actually do regularly. But anyway, you are a self-confessed space nerd.
Right.
And you've written this amazing book, which I was explaining to Neil and to everyone else in part one, that the great thing about this book, I think, is the fact that it dedicates one page to some of the most complicated, you know, space ideas, but it's so digestible. I love it.
Thank you. That means so much. Like, that's been my goal with being a space or science communicator, is that I want to make sure that everyone understands that anyone can learn it. Because to be honest, I'm actually self-taught. I don't have an astrophysics degree because I'm in Hollywood. I pursue entertainment, but this science stuff has always been an interest and a hobby. So if I can learn it, my goal is to let everyone else know that they can, as long as they have an interest. So what I excel at is making very complicated subjects digestible, which is why only like one page, like you said, is devoted to a specific subject. And so we get into some pretty complex stuff too, like string theory and wormholes and, you know, like the cosmological constant and Einstein and Hubble's law. But hopefully everyone can understand it. And last week, I just updated my book to include metric units. So you guys in the UK will be able to understand my units of measure. So, but thank you, though. I know I'm very proud to have written it. I've always wanted to. I just couldn't think of an idea. And as they say, just write what you know. So
is that your book that you have in your hand there?
Just in case I need to reference it.
Yeah, but when he says that there's one page per concept, that it's not the book is 45 feet wide.
With 18 columns and font size 8. Yeah.
It's only one page, but you need 12 strong men to change page two to page three.
And those things that jewelers wear when they want to see whether your watch has any diamonds, just if you can just about see the font in that.
That's all I ask. You have to order that piece separately, but you know.
Yeah. All I ask is a team of slaves and a jeweler's eyepiece. It's not a huge amount to ask.
I don't think so.
Board.
I don't think it is.
Stop refusing my Amazon shopping cart queries because you won't include people who bought this. Also bought 12 other people.
That's right.
Well, Kalpana, I said that you're going to explain to Neil, to myself, and to all of our audience that, you know, space is terrifying. And the thing I love about this is I've said this many times in the podcast to Neil, and I say it to everybody who'll listen to me. I think we are the most ridiculous, happy accident possible. And the most terrifying thing I can think of about space is two things. One is either we are the only conscious, you know, civilization, which is utterly terrifying because we're utterly alone, or we're not, in which case that could also be terrifying, yes. But I think less so than the first.
Right. Yeah. There, it would be more mind fucking. I know we talked that I can curse, so.
Oh, you can say anything you want.
Yeah.
You're more than fucking welcome to
this. Okay, amazing. I was like, I'm going to wait for them to say it first, but I was like, fuck it, I'll just say it. I agree. In an unending, unfathomably large universe, the fact that we could actually be alone, which is a possibility, not probability, but a possibility, is actually very terrifying. I don't know why. Because I feel as though that would put more importance and significance on us if we actually were, and I don't want that. So
that's it. The thing that I tell Neil all the time, and sometimes people do find this odd, like I find my insignificance really reassuring.
Yes.
Like I love the fact that I and we as human beings, we think we're great and we have all these grand ideas, and I understand that it's amazing that we understand the cosmos to the level that we do, but it also doesn't matter what we do. In other words, like what have we been around for 100,000 years?
Right.
Like dinosaurs lived on Earth for tens of millions of they were the apex for so long, and they're gone. So
exactly.
We'll be gone at some point. It doesn't make any difference.
It doesn't make a difference. Yeah.
Your insignificance, Dave, it gives me comfort. Yeah. You're utter meaningless to society, to the world, to the universe, is something that greatly comforts me.
Fair.
Not
fair.
So much everybody else's. I mean, I'd like to chat to Kalpana while we have her here.
Fair enough, you know?
Let's go through some of the things you think are terrifying about space.
Definitely. Well, anytime you think of space and its vastness and its size, you think of external threats like asteroids and black holes, and things that are unknown tend to be terrifying towards humans. But everything within our solar system can essentially kill us. So I'll start locally with the sun.
Okay,
the sun.
I would have thought the life giver, but hey, you wanted to kill us. Okay.
You know, yes, it weirdly enough does both. And it's, you know, as humans, where we have to be in that like Goldilocks zone of not too hot, not too cold, just right in the middle. We can't have too much or too little of anything, including water. Water can kill us as well. But we're going to... That's more biology. That's not really my expertise. Okay. So the sun, because of its immense radiation, which it's constantly emitting, things like solar flares are very dangerous to us. Luckily for us, our atmosphere and our magnetic field blocks out a lot of the harmful rays, like gamma rays. But nonetheless, you just never know if one day it decides to eject a lot of its material as a solar flare, or what's known as a coronal mass ejection, where it ejects its own material moving at a million miles per hour. I don't know what that is in metric. Do you guys actually use metric?
We do on our, like our road signs are in kilometers an hour and whatever. But to be honest with you, it's only really become kind of, you know, standard here in the last, I don't know what, Neil, 20, 30 years maybe. So
we're in Ireland. So the UK is obviously, they're still imperial.
Imperial.
Along
with the rest of Europe. Yeah.
Right. That's what I kind of figured. I was like, maybe I should have clarified. Apologies for my American ignorance.
But miles per hour, miles per gallon, we get miles.
miles per gallon. Yeah, I got it.
Yeah, we still get all that stuff. Yeah.
Gotcha. So the sun can eject material moving at speeds of like a million miles per hour. And it's very dangerous. It's pure radiation that can fuck up our atmosphere. And it's not predicted that something to that level can happen. But what I've learned with space is anything is possible. You have to leave a margin of error. So that sun could do that. And actually, in about 5 billion years, the sun's life will end. It's about halfway through its 10 billion year life now. And when that happens, more than likely, if humans are still around, we would have left Earth, because we would have to eventually. But the sun will expand to becoming a red giant. And during that phase, it'll expand out so far that it will swallow Earth. So nonetheless, like, it will destroy this planet
eventually,
one day anyway. But you know, in general, the radiation it emits is just, it's not good. The reason why astronauts have to be so protected out in space is because of the radiation. They don't have an atmosphere to protect them. So the sun itself is, although it gives us life, it's very deadly. So
is it true that that's why we have red-haired people, as an early warning system? So that if the solar flare does come and you just see your red-haired friend just explode, like freckles, 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 And
you know, I'm going to go with that because red hair people don't have, they're not favored in society. So if you guys are taking one for the team, then that gives you, you know, some positive viewpoints in this planet. But yes, yes, you guys are direct descendants. You're children of the sun. So you'll be the first to go.
Excellent.
Yeah, that makes perfect sense. What about, you mentioned things like asteroids and all. Are asteroids a real threat?
Asteroids are a real threat. So what they're known as near-Earth objects, NEOs, literally the asteroids that are near Earth, and then thousands of them are constantly monitored. A handful of them are known to be potentially hazardous. And these are anything, asteroids that are a kilometer, 1 to 2 kilometers, because those are the sizes that could cause mass devastation on this planet. None of them are actually on a path to hitting us. What concerns me actually are comets that are coming from much further away, because
that we don't necessarily have an eye
exactly
on all the
time. That could the speeds that they travel, it could, you know, we could find them when it's a bit too late. But anything that's between 1 to 2 kilometers and obviously bigger would be devastating to life on Earth.
See,
so
that's the thing.
Yeah,
like I mean, if you look at the moon, which is our nearest celestial brother. If you look at any of the planets that we can observe from our amazing probes we've sent around, if you look at Earth itself, we've been hit so many times. We know what it did to the dinosaurs. Like, it's only a matter of time. It's not even a matter. And again, this comes back to that whole concept of humans believing that we are somehow special, that it won't happen to us. Like, of course it will.
Of course it will. That's the thing. You know, it sounds so bleak when I tell my audience this, whether in person or online, but I always say that we don't fucking matter, because it's true. We're not special. Like, we're not going to be protected by some entity out there. And it sounds terrible to say that, but I actually take it as a comforting thought, because I don't want to put so much importance on our existence that we can't cope with death, because it's inevitable for everybody, no matter how it happens. So certainly asteroids don't give a shit. They could somehow gravitationally be knocked out of their orbit and head our way. And as I'm looking at the stats I sent you, there are over 1.1 million known asteroids in our solar system. 30,000 of them are near-Earth objects, and about 2,400 are potentially hazardous. So
yeah, we actually,
that's a lot.
In the first season of this podcast, we spoke to Dr. Amy Meinzer, who was the consultant on that Netflix film, Don't Look Up.
Yeah.
So she works in NEOWISE, the near-Earth object for NASA. She's part of that program to keep an eye on things. And she didn't make us feel any better than you are. I'll be honest with you. She was like, it's really unlikely, but it is definitely going to happen.
It's definitely going to happen. Yes, exactly. Yeah. Then that's the thing with numbers and space. Even if when you, like, the chances might be low, but there's always a chance just because the numbers are so high. So 1.1 million known asteroids, you have to throw that word in there because that's all we know of so far.
Yeah.
And then 2,700 are potentially hazardous. That's a pretty high number.
Should I fix my mortgage or not? I just need to know.
I think you should just live every day to the fullest, because it could.
Yeah. See, that's easier for Dave to say. Like, Dave's like, oh, we're going to be hit eventually. Dave, you've lived your life. That's fine. It's almost over for you. You're not scared. You've done all the things you wanted. You've gotten your carriage clock simply for applying for the pension. It's fine.
You are so close to my age. It's not even.
I think it's about 2 years. Like, that's all.
Yeah, maybe. But yeah, like, I just love that. I love the fact that, you know, for example, even I saw an amazing graphic the other day about. It was a visualization of how the Earth moves through space.
Right.
On this, you know, not, you know, this elliptical orbit that we're on, with the moon traveling around us. And we have one moon. And I know our moons orbit us. They're not going to crash into us realistically. But then, like, you know, I don't know, is it Saturn that has 190 moons or something? And like, it is literally moving through space. It looks like it's in an asteroid field. Now, it's its own moons.
Right.
But some of them are coming from so far away. Like, surely there could be some kind of cataclysmic, you know, orbital crash between two moons that would offset one that smashes into Saturn. Like, you don't know what's going to happen. So
exactly,
it's
so true. And Jupiter and Saturn are always competing for the most moons. And last I checked, I think Saturn is again ahead. And I don't think you were too far off. I want to say it's like 130 something moons, but they're always being discovered because of its rings. They form moons, they break up moons. So it's just always adding numbers. And also, compared to the planet size, the moons are so small. So obviously discovering all of them is next to impossible at this point. Yeah. But yeah, but you're right. There's so much shit in the, even within our own neighborhood that like you would think the chances of getting hit are so much more actually. So
yeah,
is there anything that we are doing that might end up on us destroying ourselves? Like if you've seen Oppenheimer, they weren't sure at the start, would the bomb destroy the fabric of the universe?
Right.
Is there anything that we are actually doing or, you know, are looking into that maybe we might push ourselves towards the precipice?
People always wonder that, especially with the CERN, the particle accelerator in Sweden. And, you know, when they say like,
I think, isn't it?
Switzerland, sorry. Yes.
Yeah, yeah.
Geneva, that's right. And they always say that they're making tiny black holes and everyone gets concerned as to what does that mean? Could they grow and swallow up the entire Earth? I don't tend to worry about that stuff too much because the people who are in charge of that are so much more smarter than even I am. So I think like in the controlled experiment, I wouldn't necessarily worry too much about those kinds of discoveries becoming too out of our control just yet. Anything I feel like we're creating on Earth hasn't been that big of a deal.
Yeah, I mean, detonating a nuclear bomb incorrectly, I think would be a lot worse than, oh no, CERN have made a giant black hole.
Yeah,
and
yeah,
we're literally
yeah.
gone. Like,
and we're gone.
You're not.
Right.
We're not going to know. You know, it's
right.
going to happen.
Yes, exactly. And like these black holes are so incredibly small. Like it's something you can't even visualize that it wouldn't necessarily be an issue. But I.
What really, about what about the real ones though? Like what about actual right. black holes? Are they a danger to us?
They aren't. However, the concept behind them is an interestingly terrifying one. Right, when you think of the fact that there are literal three-dimensional holes in space that consume everything that fall beyond their border, known as the event horizon. That's a scary thought. Black holes to me are like the serial killers of the universe because they just give no fucks. If you get too close, you're done. Like there's no, you can't save yourself, but they're so fascinating because the laws of physics are known to break down inside them.
That
itself is, it's weird. And the mystery of them, like what happens at the center known as a singularity, which is where all the mass resides, like a infinitely dense point in space, which is why you can't escape from it. The gravity is just too strong. But what's believed is if you cross the event horizon, you start getting spaghettified. This is spaghettification is an actual scientific term. Your feet start getting ripped apart to the atomic level. If your feet enter first or it's your head, depends on what goes in first, starts right, to get okay. spaghettified and it works the way up through your body. So you were witnessing this happen. But what's even crazier to me is let's say you enter a black hole and you're able to turn around and see normal space outside of the black hole. What they say is you see the entire existence of the universe play out in front of you because it's so trippy, like more than terrifying. This stuff is just so insane to imagine. So for instance, Einstein was the one who came up with the idea when it's actually been pretty much proven, relativity theory, that space and time are one, which is why time is relative and it has been measured. That's known as general relativity. So for instance, when you're in a deeper gravitational field, time moves slower for you.
Slower, yes.
Right. So it's actually like the core of the Earth is younger by 2.5 years than the crust because the center of Earth is deeper in the gravity well. So if you even remember that movie Interstellar with Matthew McConaughey, when they were on that like crazy water world, every hour for them was 7 years on Earth. But that's true. That's general relativity. So time is relative everywhere you are in space. And I lost my point. Oh, yeah. So when you're in a black hole and you turn around and it because of the way it distorts space and time, they say you could pretty much you'd be able to see the entire duration of the universe play out in front of you because time is so incredibly warped.
So if you weren't being like very quickly consumed by the black hole, you could literally see 13 billion years of time
and the future pass.
What
I know right
so hold on, so God or the universe or space, it's slowly feeding me into this shredding machine,
right?
Let's assume that it's not like my shredding machine and it doesn't get stuck and you have to clean out the right. I'm slowly being fed into this machine feet first because I've managed to turn myself around.
Yeah, while swimming away from this black hole.
My feet are becoming spaghettified.
Right.
Right.
Yeah.
So my feet are turning into strands of spaghetti at a kind of an atomic level. And I can see everything that's ever happened in the universe and everything that will ever happen in the universe from now on.
Yeah. If as long as you're looking outside, like you turn around and you see the
Do I need glasses?
Or do I do because my vision's terrible. So
yeah, okay. the newspaper.
What a waste it would be. Imagine if it was all there in front of you and you'd forgotten your glasses.
I mean, can't see shit.
No, nightmare that would be.
The black hole actually provides the goggles as you enter in. Right. Yeah, it gives you the little headset and you're fine. You can see.
And there's young exactly. collecting them afterwards.
Yeah, you've got to put them in a little bucket afterwards. Yeah,
that's right. That's exactly right. There for the next person. But what's an even crazier thing though is, let's say your friend was on the spaceship and you're falling into a black hole. You fell in, but your friend will forever see you imprinted on the event horizon. They never see you disappear. Like, you're almost frozen there.
Some ways it's kind of beautiful, you know, like your loved ones have never gone. They're just constantly spinning around an infinitely dense black giant hole, like Han Solo in carbide, just going
They're just frozen there in time from the viewer's point of view, but you actually fell in. They just don't see it because time and space are disappeared, so they like pretty much stop at the board.
So if Dave dies in front of me, I'm not even rid of him then.
No.
He's
still there.
He'll always forever be in
my field of vision.
That's right.
Forever.
Literally like imprinted.
Like a floater. Like a floater in my eye that I can't get rid of off my lens.
But if you try to look at it, they like just move away, but they're always there, like the floaters do. That's going to be him. He's forever imprinted in the fabric of space-time.
It's actually a really good analogy for our relationship, to be honest.
He's just kind of always there.
And we are like the Earth, and I'm the you're the crust, and I'm the center that's 2.5 years old.
So like black holes tend to be everyone's almost favorite topic of space, because when you think about the fact that everything we know of just breaks down when you enter one, it seems almost magical that way, and those kinds of unknown things are so fascinating to us.
Isn't it true though that we understand, I suppose, the maths of a black hole, right? We understand on paper like what's happening, but obviously no one's been to a black hole. No one knows what would happen. I mean, no one's been there. They do know what would happen, but I mean, that in itself is terrifying, that these things exist, and I suppose we understand them on paper, but you know, that's like, you know, saying that you could be friends with a guy from Offaly until you actually meet one, and then you have to experience what that's actually like, you know.
Exactly. Yeah,
Can we see these, or is it the absence of everything around them that makes us see them? Can we see black holes?
That's a good question. So we've actually been able to, I guess, photograph or image two of them. The Sagittarius A star, which is at the center of our Milky Way galaxy. These are super massive black holes. Mm. Their origins are still kind of a mystery, and they must have been around since billions of years. And when I say super massive, like millions to billions of times the mass of our sun. Doesn't necessarily mean they're gigantic. Some for sure are, but mass and size are different things. Yeah. Anyway, that's besides the point. But so we've been able to photograph that one. It's 26,000 light years away at our galactic center. The first one we photographed or imaged was M87, which is a galaxy 55 million light years away. And this black hole is 66 billion times the mass of our sun. This one is actually huge.
Billion times.
Yeah. Am I right or am I adding numbers? No, 66. No, that sounds about right. Yeah. It's something.
It's just in the billions. Unfathomably big. Like, you think about it. I mean, I've seen these visualizations on YouTube and they are amazing when, you know, it goes, this is Earth. And then look at the little fella over there. That's Mercury. Right. Now, do you get it? You're like, yeah, I get it. And then they go, okay, here's the sun. And it's this big, huge thing. But then the video is like 10 minutes long. And it's like, so the sun was like in the first 20 seconds of it.
Yeah.
That's how small that is.
That's
so
how
like
small.
66
billion times the mass of our sun. If you, I encourage everyone who's listening, look up these images. You literally just Google the first images of black hole. And a lot of them have side-by-side comparisons of M87 and our Sagittarius A star. And some people have even made it accurate to size, in the sense that you'll see the M87 image, then you'll see a zoom in to the Sagittarius A star one, and the M87 has a ring where Pluto's orbit would be within that black hole, because that's how big it is. So like, imagine a giant circle, and within it is a tiny circle, and that's Pluto's orbit. That's how big that black hole is. So we've been able to image them, to go back to your question, because of what's known as the accretion disk. This is a disk of swirling hot gas and matter that's falling into the black hole. But because it's so hot, like millions of millions of degrees, it's giving off a lot of radiation, essentially light. So the reason we can see the black hole, it's because it can shadow against the light behind it or around it.
Wow.
Yeah. But otherwise, yeah, if it's not feeding on anything and it just lurks in space, you can't see them. You can just assume their existence based on their gravitational influence of objects around them, which scientists have been able to do.
Is this accretion disk? How hot is it? Like, is it hotter than cheese you take out of the microwave?
Just a little bit. A little bit hotter. Okay.
It's a little bit hotter than the corn baller in Arrested Development. If anybody remembers that show, every single cast member got burnt on the corn baller. It's my favorite bit of the whole show.
It's just like a degree or two hotter. Not that much more. But yeah, so definitely check out those images. I mean, to me, one of the most fascinating things about space is the fact that there are people who have advanced our understanding of it, that we can take images of black holes. And I'll quickly give a shout out to the Event Horizon Telescope that does it. This is a series of radio telescopes around the world who coordinate. Technology is just crazy to me. But as the Earth rotates, they gather the data from each of these telescopes when they come into this direct line of the black hole. And then they put together the data to give you this kind of image. And essentially, this telescope, which is a series of radio telescopes, can give you an aperture, which in a telescope terminology is the size of the lens or mirror. They give you an aperture, the diameter of the Earth. So it's a telescope that gives you a diameter, aperture, the diameter of the Earth, which is why they can collect so much data. But this is looking in radio waves. So with the electromagnetic spectrum.
Is one of those in Puerto Rico?
It might be.
Because I have been on the second biggest radio telescope in the world. It was the biggest at the time.
Physically been on it.
I've been on it. Yeah, I've been on it. We did a science show about Jocelyn Bell Burnell, who was famously discovered pulsars.
Yeah, that definitely.
And didn't get the credit for it. And it's in, you know, in GoldenEye, where Sean Bean fights Pierce Brosnan? Right? They fight on this disc, this massive radio telescope disc that's like 20 square kilometers. And I have stood on that or above that and shat myself because it's so high.
Right. Arecibo Telescope. Arecibo, I don't think it's there anymore. I think during the pandemic, broke down, or like it just got old.
Or it saw something it shouldn't have seen.
Yeah, it was shut down. Maybe so.
Apparently Jimmy Stewart used it and he saw something he shouldn't have seen. He was at home for the summer. He broke his leg and he saw Raymond Burr open up a black hole. There's an old reference for you.
I was going to say, now you're really delving back into it. I thought I was the old guy.
I only know these names, but I don't get the references. I won't lie.
That's fine.
Don't worry about it. Rear Window.
Yeah.
Got it.
No, nobody else, only Neil and his esoteric film buddies are getting this reference.
It's referenced in a million times after it. It's such a famous film. The bit where The Simpsons, where Bart breaks his leg and is looking out the window.
Yes. Oh, sure. Family Guy did one about them as well.
And Family Guy does it. All I'm saying to you, if you ever go into a black hole, you will have seen all of these films and all of the remakes of these films.
In real time, over billions of years.
Yeah.
One of the other things I really wanted to ask you about, though, is because you talk about, like, so we're aware of black holes because of their effect on everything that we can observe. What about things that are simply the absence of things? What about these things called voids?
What are they?
I don't think they're fun at all. I'm really scared of voids. I don't understand them at all.
Definitely. So, okay, voids, let me say, they're not dangerous like a black hole. To me, a lot of what's terrifying about space is almost like an existential threat. Like, it's just...
Yes, that's how
mind.
I feel.
Yeah. And there are certain things that could kill us, and that doesn't terrify me as much as the ones that just really mess with your head. So, as we have learned to understand the structure of our universe, it's very web-like. Galaxies tend to clump up into clusters and superclusters because of gravity, which means that space isn't necessarily uniform everywhere. There are places where it's high density of matter, like superclusters, and other ones where it's void of matter. That's why they're called voids. Science is very literal.
If I can draw an analogy to our listeners, it's like Dublin and the greater Dublin area. That's where there's lots of exciting people and things. And then Offaly is like a void where nobody wants to be there. No one lives there. There's a couple of cows. As the road to Dublin is in Offaly. That's about it. You know, isn't that right,
I think,
Neil?
A better analogy would be somewhere between your left ear and your right ear.
Both sound very accurate, actually.
Yeah, so. Good analogies, yeah.
But that's exactly right. Think of like a dense metropolitan city and the farm outskirts. So people are clumped up here. And then even outside of LA, it's very, very sparse. So yeah. The creepiest one, known as the loneliest place in space, is known as the Bootes void. So it's spelled
Bootes.
Like,
I didn't know how to pronounce that.
Nobody does. It's Bootes, and there's two of the dots above the second O. Forgetting what it's called. But so it looks like Bootes void, which is great, even better. But it's Bootes void. It's the largest void that we know of in the universe, and it's about 330 million light years across. So what scientists say is that this void should, the space should contain about 2,000 galaxies. But they've only found about 60, and that's within 330 million light years. It's such a huge area of just nothing. And it's creepy because if our Milky Way galaxy was in that void, we might not know other galaxies even exist. And
that's the bit. Yeah.
I would bet you money that it has a Starbucks.
For sure. Right? Without doubt.
Starbucks and an Irish pub, I can guarantee.
In one of those galaxies. Yeah.
With a bike on the wall, and they still sell Guinness. It's definitely that's the thing I think that I really kind of messed with my head is that as much as we can be aware of the universe, where we are, we live in a densely populated area. So,
right.
You know, like if we want to draw that, all joking aside, you want to draw that analogy of a city and urban environment, you look around, there's other things. You go, oh, person, building, car, whatever. Whereas you could literally be in the void and go, wow, the universe is made of nothing. We are the center of the universe because there's nothing else.
There's nothing 330
else. Million light years.
Exactly. Yeah. Like, so we've always been able to see the Andromeda Galaxy, our closest galactic neighbor. It's about 2.5 million light years away. But you can see it with the naked eye, like if you have clear skies. Mm. It's a bit like of a fuzzy patch. So it does look different than other stars. Prior to the early 1900s, it was Edwin Hubble who eventually led to the discovery that there are other galaxies out there. Prior to that, they just thought that they were islands of stars within our own galaxy. Mm. So as technology got better, and he used actually a telescope here in Pasadena, California, which was the largest at the time, about 100 inches in diameter, the aperture, they thought that other galaxies, they just never thought that they existed. They never even thought about them. So my point is, we didn't even know other galaxies existed until the early 1900s. So this is relatively new for humanity to know that other galaxies are out there. But if we were still living the same life in a galaxy in that void, we still wouldn't know that other galaxies exist. And you're absolutely right. We would feel like we were the center, or at the very least alone. And that's
alone,
sad.
Yeah.
Let me put what Dave is slagging off my home county here. let me draw the space analogy between, or the space connection between my county and California. There's none between Port Marnock, which is where he's from, and California. The Leviathan of Parsonstown was a historic reflecting telescope, which was the largest telescope in the world from 1845 until the Hooker telescope in California in 1917.
Oh,
so shove this up your metropolitan black hole.
Damn. Okay. You know what? I have to bow down to that because the Hooker one was the one I was referring to, the one that Edwin Hubble
used.
Just before that, the old Anglo-Irish lads down there in Barr, in the castle in Barr Castle, built this amazing telescope.
Of course they did. There was nothing else around. They built all the real estate and they were bored out of their minds. What do we do? Well, build a telescope. Well, we might as well.
Well, better than you walking around Dublin going, building person thing. How you just described your walk around your home city.
Well, actually, the loneliness is something I do want to ask you about as well. Sure. Because we live in an 8-planet solar system over right there. Sometimes they keep changing whether Pluto is or isn't, but whatever. But we know our neighbors. Mm-hmm. You know, we've called over with asked for crockery and lend of some sugar or whatever people do. But what about planets that are actually kicked out of their neighborhood and then they just go off on their own? It's so sad.
That's exactly right. So we're lucky to have nestled and stayed with our solar system. So, planets generally always form around stars. This is as far as, I always say this, it's as far as we know, every example we've ever seen. And it actually makes sense because, you know, a planet or a nebula, a solar nebula, which is what we form out of, the most of the material will gather in the center to form the star, and then the remaining material will form the planets around it. So a lot of times when this happens, you can imagine how chaotic this event of formation is, which would last thousands of millions of years. And there's so much debris and shit flying around that things are hitting each other all the time. And so this easily allows planets to get ejected from their home solar systems. And so scientists predict that most planets that exist in the universe are rogue. So they got ejected out of their home. Yeah, most of them, more than likely, the chances are, is that majority are rogue. They're obviously very difficult to find because we see things in space because they reflect light. If you're just a planet floating around in the darkness, we're not going to be able to really see you because there's no star nearby for you to reflect light. So if they're getting flung around, there is always a small, but there's always a chance that one could just come zooming into our solar system and crash into us, right? The chances are always there for anything.
So it's like if somebody started a brand new radio show. So everything coalesces around the star, right? And there's all this, there's a load of other shit bumping into each other, but it coalesces around the star. But another planet could have been ejected out.
Neil
originally
is making reference to my career, which is unfair on my former co-host, a great man who decided on his own to be ejected from my solar system.
I
did not force him out.
You didn't yet.
So in space, is it true that stars can have massive egos and just get rid of a planet, even though the planet is clearly extremely talented? Is any of this
it's proven. It reflects, you know, just the stars, even that we, the stars we have on this planet. And I say that working in Hollywood, but yes, egos are universal for any kind of star.
Yeah, yeah. I've heard this star said, I want a stellar career, and went in and just demanded all the sun's light just come down on him. That's what I heard.
And aren't you lucky that you're part of this, Neil?
Absolutely.
He's the planet that stayed.
Yeah, I can eject you at any time.
Oh, what a children's story that would be, the planet that stayed.
The planet that stayed. I know, that's true. As if it's even their choice, right? That would be the PG version. Otherwise, it would be like the abusive parents who ejected them. It's the reality.
The planet who couldn't afford to rent that place on his own, so he stayed.
Exactly.
And Kalpana, isn't really, though, the scariest thing in space, or maybe in science, is the fact that there is a growing number of people who are rejecting science and rejecting fact. Isn't that literally more terrifying than an NEO, you know, a black hole, some kind of CERN explode? Like, surely just everybody going, no, I don't believe science anymore.
You know, Dave, that's very well put. And I'm so glad you came to that conclusion on your own. And it wasn't something I had asked to put into this discussion. It is true. It sounds silly, guys. Like, anytime I kind of bring it up or whatever, flat earthers and things like that, because the idea behind flat earth is absolutely insane. The privilege that you have, that you can sit there and think that the earth is flat because there's nothing going wrong in your life, right, is insane. So it sounds silly. It's like, really, why worry about these people? But it doesn't tend to just end there. People who go down these like YouTube rabbit holes or whatever of conspiracies, flat earth is silly. But then you get into things like moon landing denying, which, yes, doesn't harm society. But to me, it's so disrespectful because so many people have died in the pursuit of space exploration. And then you can just sit there and, you know, shit on everything that went into getting to the moon and beyond, which we will do eventually. And just to say that it's a conspiracy, to me, is disrespectful. But that also lends you to becoming more anti-vax. And not that I'm trying to push people one way or the other, but I tend to trust science and modern medicine because it's clearly done well for us. I mean, we're all if science fucked up along the way, we wouldn't be here, right? Like, they're doing something right. And it just lends to a bigger picture of mistrusting experts. It's like, why people who have devoted their lives to studying anything, medicine, anything science related, any profession you can think of, like, would you not take your car to a mechanic? Like, he's an expert in his field because, you know, you think you know better. Like, go for it then, like, fix your own shit. If you are so anti-medicine, then don't ever go to a hospital when you're actually sick. So my point is, like, flat earth is silly, but to me it's a gateway to this bigger picture of mistrusting science and experts. Science to me is one of the most unbiased things. Like, all it is this, the search of and for the truth of our natural environment. We're curious creatures. We want to know how shit works. And that's what the subject of science is. So for people to be literally not believing something that is so unbiased that way, that has gotten society to where it is today, is just, it's terrifying to me, because if they grow in numbers, then there goes the progress of our species.
And sometimes, you know, people like that throw things at you, like, well, remember when science thought this, and now, and I'm like, no, hang on, that is the essence of science. Science admits it was wrong, because knowledge has advanced what we understand. And it's also saying, by the way, what we now are saying is fact may also be wrong if there are enough experiments done and enough hypotheses put forward and enough proof to say that we will absolutely shift our beliefs, because if they're not beliefs, sorry, we will shift our factual understanding of what's in front of us. Like, it's that's what terrifies me, is that, that these people just, they reject science at its absolute core, which is not a belief system. You don't have to believe in science.
That's exactly right. That's so well said. It is not a belief system, and it's always looking to be proven wrong. Like, people who pursue this with PhDs, or they want to get grants for their research or whatever, they want to be able to discover the next big thing and to build upon what's already been done. Nobody's sitting there hiding information. Like, what purpose would that solve? You know, for instance, with the James Webb Space Telescope, it's found galaxies that were so well formed earlier than we ever thought possible. So a lot of people on social media who have a very large following would be like, this means that the age of the universe is wrong, and they're not qualified to say this. And then so you have to have scientists going in there being like, no, what we think is wrong is maybe our understanding of galactic formation. But the consensus of the scientific community, based on so much evidence, is that it's about 13 and a half billion years old, the age of the universe. So you have these people who are public figures who are just like spewing all this nonsense based on nothing anyone credible said, but because their following is so large, they get people believing them. And for some reason, I'm not quite understanding it, and I'm not sure how to put it into words, but the idea behind being mainstream science or mainstream news is seen as a negative now, as if this entire time it's been a lie. And so alternate news sources, like, no offense, podcasts, are seen as the truth now, right? But like, if you're a podcast with millions of viewers or listeners, aren't you now the mainstream? So I just don't understand. Like, why?
Don't
why
worry about that. Yeah, that's right. don't worry about that at all. We're going to influence four fellas in a trailer.
You know, as long as they buy my book, I'm fine with that.
They definitely will. Well,
but anyway, I just want to say, like, it's just a concerning thing to me. And I think it should be taken more seriously, and more effort should be done on everyone's part to mitigate this increase in anti-science, because it's, trust me, it's not going to do humans or this world or society any good. So science is not the thing to be shitting on, guys. That's all I want to say.
Thank you very much to Big Pharma's Kalpana Pot.
Sponsored by Pfizer.
Ezra Johnson and Moderna. She's injected them all into her eyeballs.
Exactly. Right. And I'm invincible now. And then tomorrow you'll find out I'm dead. So.
Yeah. Well, look, we hope not, because your book, Spaced Out, is brilliant. A Casual Approach to the Cosmos by Kalpana Pot. And you know what? What's amazing is I have four kids. And one of them is 14.
The end of the story.
Yeah, it was amazing because I have four kids.
This man was allowed, in this country, this man was allowed breed. Nobody thought it was possible, or indeed.
It just, you know, that itself, it just disproves science right there.
Yeah, no, right there. I am the exception. No, but what I did was I showed it to my 14-year-old, who has, you know, the usual 14-year-old's interest in science. It's a subject he has to do in school. Right. He hates everything he has to do in school. But he loved the accessibility of the book that I spoke about earlier on. He was like, okay, no, I'm doing this in science. And he read it a couple of times. And then he went,
I get it now. And I was like,
That means so much to me. That's all I'm trying to do. Thank you for letting me know that. That means a lot. Because my first time writing something too, and I know what I'm good at is translating complex science topics to make it understandable, but you still never know. So I'm really glad to hear that, Dave.
Well, he loved it, and I'll definitely be getting him to read the rest of it. But look, yes, go and get your hands on Spaced Out, A Casual Approach to the Cosmos by Kalpana Pod. And Kalpana, thank you so much for taking the time to join us and chat through all this today and terrifying the life out of us.
That's exactly. I hope I gave every listener an existential crisis, because that's what I'm here to do.
definitely. All right, Kalpana, thank you so much.
Thank you.
Right, welcome back to Why Would You Tell Me That? And Neil, are you more afraid of space now than you were? Or do you feel slightly reassured? Are you having an existential crisis like Kalpana offered? How are you feeling?
I feel, first of all, Kalpana was great. Second of all, when I watch something like a Christopher Nolan film and I cannot understand what the timeline is, the bit that I'm going to remember from this is if I get sucked into a black hole, I will see everything that there's ever been and everything there will be in the future.
While
my toes are spaghetti. That sounds like what someone would say on the worst date that you've ever had in the history of the world at the start. Like, she's dealing with concepts and she's making them simple, but the concepts themselves are kind of mind-blowing. So what a great conversation.
She's brilliant. Absolutely. You know, check out that book, Spaced Out. It is really genuinely very good. Right. That is me done for this week. Hopefully Neil won't be terrifying us next week. What have you got for us, though?
I'm going to tell you about what accidentally electrocuting a dead frog will tell you about your mind.
Oh, okay. I'll be intrigued by that one, I guarantee you. Neil Delamere, thank you very much.
Mom deserves the best, and there's no better place to shop for Mother's Day than Whole Foods Market. They're your destination for unbeatable savings, from premium gifts to show-stopping flowers and irresistible desserts. Start by saving 33% with Prime on all body care and candles. Then get a 15-stem bunch of tulips for just $9.99 each with Prime. Round out Mom's menu with festive rosé, irresistible berry chantilly cake, and more special treats. Come celebrate Mother's Day at Whole Foods Market.
Planning for your next trip? Elevate your travel style with Quince. Quince has all the jet-setting essentials you'll want for your next getaway, like European linen, premium luggage options, buttery soft Italian leather bags, and so much more. And is all priced at 50 to 80% less than similar brands. Plus, Quince only works with factories that use safe and ethical manufacturing practices. Pack your bags with high-quality essentials you'll be wearing for vacations to come with Quince. Go to quince.com/pack for free shipping and 365-day returns.